Welcome to this week's edition of Brews and Crews podcast. I am your host, Chris Jacobson, and I am coming to you with another remote guest all the way from the West Coast in LA. Luke Braun is joining us on the podcast. And if you don't know who he is, he's a prominent analyst and commentator on the Minnesota Vikings. He's the host of the Daily Locked On Vikings podcast, where he provides in-depth insights to the NFL team of the Minnesota Vikings. Also the players, game strategies. He's also the co-host of Locked On NFL podcast, and he contributes various Vikings-related media outlets. Luke Braun has been covering the Vikings since 2016, and he's been sharing his perspectives from California, as we just said, through also growing up in Minnesota and being a lifelong Vikings fan as well, such as myself. And also, in addition to that, he produces detailed historical content about the Vikings and engages with fans through platforms like Patreon and also X. And his work emphasizes both on-field achievements and also the team through its broader culture and emotional significance to its fans. Luke, I want to welcome you all the way from Minnesota, man.
Wow, you nailed it. That's everything. You got it. Well, I have a Patreon page. That's patreon.com/LukeBraunNFL. That's the one I want you to push, okay?
Heck yeah, and we'll do that throughout and at the end as well for you. No problem. But, you know, during this, normally you would be sitting next to me here and we'd be having a beverage. And I'm having a beverage by myself. And I just want you to guess what I might be having, because we're talking a little bit Vikings here and there. What do you think I would drink if I'm a Vikings fan?
If you're a Vikings fan...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, the real answer is a Labatt's Blue. That's what any self-respecting Minnesotan will be imbibing during a football conversation. But you made it sound like it's going to be like Grey Duck vodka or something.
Dude, we didn't even talk beforehand. And it's Grey Duck vodka.
Yes. It has to be. Yeah, it has to be.
It has to be. Because Chad Greenway is. Absolutely. And I'm just going to have it on the rocks, actually, as we talk.
Wow.
But Luke,
man, I do. I don't do that with vodka. I'll do that with basically any whiskey, rum. I could probably do gin, but don't prefer it. But not with vodka. It's not for me.
Do you have a bourbon or a whiskey of preference? Because this is we have a lot of bourbon whiskey on this podcast.
I'm not much of a snooty guy when it comes to drinks. Like my taste in beer is like very Bud Light. Like it's very, just get me like a Stella that's about as fancy as I'll go, which does not turn out well in Los Angeles, where there are a lot of hipster places that everything they have is some craft brew from like some farm. Like, but for whiskey, it's probably like Wild Turkey.
Oh yeah. And I like Wild Turkey Long Branch. Just that's a different portion of their stuff.
You could be making that up. I have no idea. It's the one at the grocery store.
Yes, the one at the grocery store. Well, anyways, Luke, I want to welcome you because you're all the way over in LA and you grew up in Minnesota, but where about in Minnesota mm-hmm. did you grow up?
Lakeville. Go Cougars, Lakeville South.
All right. So then you've been a lifelong Vikings fan, right?
Yep. Grew up. My dad's been a season ticket holder since before I was born. So he's been going to basically every home game. And we actually now have a tradition where we pick a road game every year that we go to and like explore a new city. And I hadn't traveled as much. He traveled a lot for work when I was a kid. And so he's been to like every city. I haven't really. So he's like, oh yeah, we went to Jacksonville this year, which is where I got sick. It's Florida. But, yeah, so that's kind of but I grew up going to the Metrodome all the time. Watching every game with, you know, my dad or my mom and my stepdad, like very much, it's like a familial, it's like a blood thing. Like you get together on whether it's Thanksgiving or Christmas, you get together on any holiday, you will talk about the Vikings or the Gophers if you're into that. Like it's gonna happen.
Sure. And so how was your experience at Jacksonville then? I mean, the win was a little rough, but it was a weird win, wasn't it?
Yeah. You know, we thought Everbank Stadium was going to be swankier. It was a little bit like very Metrodome-y, but it was like an outdoor Metrodome where it felt that way. Like the seats felt like Metrodome seats and it was very cement and you could like see the air ducts and stuff, which is not necessarily the case somewhere like SoFi or Mercedes-Benz Stadium where they're a little bit like newer and fancier. Jacksonville itself as a city, very weird place. I understand why it has the reputation that it has. And I guess that that's fine for those people.
Sure. And what, now you said you go every year. What's your favorite stadium that you've been at so far?
You know, I love the swanky ones. Maybe I'm just a little spoiled, but like Mercedes-Benz was great. I've been to SoFi a few times for a number of events. Like I'll see concerts there and stuff too. Allegiant's great. Obviously US Bank Stadium is great. Lambeau. I like that. That's the one that like sticks out to me though, is Lambeau and the history, and it's different and you're sitting on the bleachers. And, I watched the tie of the 2018 Daniel Carlson misses three field goals. I was at that one, and we actually left early, 'cause I had a flight after like the interception that we thought sealed it. And then if you remember how that game went down, they like passed twice and stopped the clock and gave the Vikings the ball back, and they actually drove down and tied it. We thought it was over, so we left so I could go make my flight. We ended up watching the rest of it in the garage of one of the nearby houses.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So what took you out to LA then from Minnesota?
College. I went to film school at Loyola Marymount. Met my wife out here, stayed out here. Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. What was, did you have something that you wanted to do in film? Because I find if I were to go back to college, I probably would have went acting/film and,
There you go.
You're teaching. So,
by the time I was actually in college, I was dead set on being an editor, and that's what I've done since, outside of podcast. And now like the Locked On and Patreon and all that stuff is pretty close to making it so editing is no longer something I have to do. We're like on the tipping point there, but I do still edit here and there, freelance, usually for content creators, YouTubers, people, or like Twitch streamers that want things cut down and like stuff like that. But I spent a long time editing in the digital space, YouTube, and worked for Phil DeFranco. Yeah, I worked for the Fine Brothers, like YouTubers you maybe have heard of, and I was kind of on those staffs.
Sure. And so is that something that you knew you would enjoy? And then did you still enjoy it all the way up until that time?
Oh, I still love editing. I mean, I still use that skill all the time. Just now I'm making my own videos. And it's, you know, with film and using like the All-22 and just me talking into my webcam like I am to you right now. But yeah, it's, I always, like, it just came always so natural to me. I remember I was 15 years old when I first learned how to edit on, it was Final Cut Express was the thing at the time. It was 2008 or maybe 2007. And yeah, I was just like, wow, this just works. I just exactly get it. And it's super easy and it's super natural. And it's super, like, I just flow right into it. And I've always really enjoyed the kind of, I don't know what it does, like the part of my brain that has to, that like looks at a sentence and sees it on a timeline, and like that kind of temporal thought process. And I had some great professors in college that really helped me to understand that editing is about being decisive and decision making, and it's not just about, you know, the cool plugin that you know or how good you are at the tech. No, it's about understanding the flow of a conversation and having to take the parts of a conversation and recreate that into something that flows and works for your brain. I think it's a really, really awesome art that I've always loved. And a lot of what I've ended up doing is really unscripted, which is, you know, you got to make a living. And that's been fun in its own right too. But I've always loved the kind of post-production part of the process.
Yeah, as I'm starting to do this, I've been doing this for almost a year now, and I've been editing all my own stuff. Granted, I try to keep it as organic and kind of fresh as possible without too much editing, but I'm learning how to use the iMovie to make them look somewhat professional when they go onto YouTube and stuff. So I understand that it's kind of, it's an art in its form, but it's also, it's very, actually kind of therapeutic for me, because I just like looking at a finished product and saying, ooh, that actually looks somewhat professional for me.
Right. You see it all put together and you go, oh, wow, this is like the culmination of everyone's hard work, especially when you're doing narrative, because so much work went into just getting those clips onto a hard drive that you now hold in your hand.
Yeah. And so now you're in the podcasting world with Locked On Vikings, and then you're also with Locked On NFL. How do you, I guess this is for me as a podcaster, how do you prep for each episode? Because right now in where I'm at, mine is I'm maybe you don't prep at all. Maybe just go. Yeah, yeah. But right now I do one per week. So for me, it's not too terribly tough. It's just I'm prepping for the next person, and it's just one per week. So if I have no guests for that week, I have some built up in the bank. How do you prep? Because I know you're like going almost every day, it sounds mm-hmm. like.
Yeah, well, and you've done your homework on me, which is great. Like, I'm impressed by that. Because I like if I have a guest, I'll do some research. I'll try to find out, you know, things about somebody that I can ask. But for me on Locked On, when I have guests, it's not just like we're going to talk about a topic and you're my co-host today. Like, I'm here to talk about you and what's your thing. And so I rarely have guests on because the opportunity to talk to somebody that's like interesting enough for me to feel like it's a story worth telling, those like that's players, right? And players don't come along as often, or somebody like I had John Boyce on last offseason, which was great, like somebody like that. But I'm not just going to kind of have like another person in Vikings media on who has their own show. If you want to know them, you can listen to their own show. I don't know what I could add to that, you know? Usually it's just me just talking, and I'll come up with kind of the three segment structure, which is something that all Locked On shows have. And usually I type out a bulleted list. I've got a little spreadsheet of what all my topics are going to be, so I can make sure I'm not, you know, being too redundant and, you know, all right, segment one, segment two, segment three, boom, boom, boom. And over the years, this is my seventh season doing this, I've gotten good enough at speaking extemporaneously where I don't feel like I need to put down a bunch of notes, do a bunch of research. If I can riff on something, I feel like those are the best shows. And maybe I'll look up a stat, but because I know how to edit, I can stop and look up that stat in the flow of the moment and say, yeah, well, you know, Sam Darnold had this and he had... Okay, let me back up. Okay, what were his yards? Then I go back and say that sentence again, you know. Yeah, Sam Darnold had 226 yards and he threw for, you know, two touchdowns and rushed for another. And then I can have that information in the podcast in the final product. But that way I don't spend a whole bunch of time trying to amass a whole bunch of information that I don't end up using. And maybe that's my editor brain where I'm so like dialed into perfect efficiency and finding the most like efficient way to get from point A to point B, but it works. Like, I can be very relaxed about it. I can bring something up. If I want to cite my source, I can, you know, quick stop, Google it, and then I can just cut that together pretty easily. But it's definitely a workflow that has been born of a lot of years of doing it and optimizing every little piece of it over time.
Sure. Yeah. And do you find it hard to stay up to date all the time, or is it pretty simple for you now that you're in your seventh year?
You mean like to keep up with doing a show every day?
Yeah.
No, that's the job. I mean, it's part of my daily routine now that I got to do a show today, and it's the only thing that I truly have to do every day. I have my Patreon. I have other things. I mean, if I only do podcasts every day, I won't make enough money to pay rent. but, you know, so I'll usually have a lot of side projects and I'll do as much work on those as I can until it gets to a certain point in the night. And all right, now it's time to kind of wrap up my night with the podcast. And that's pretty much how life has been for the last few years.
Sure. What are some other side projects that you have?
Well, I have my Patreon page that is in season. That's probably the thing I spend the most time on, which is not efficient, but it's what I want to do, right? It's what I want to like spend my energy on. Actually, like nobody else controls that. There's no sponsors. There's no supervisors. It's the only thing that I've ever done that's been mine and mine alone. And okay, that is why I end up spending so much time there, because I can just do what I think is best. I can just communicate the point that I want to communicate, and nobody else has anything to do with it. That's really great for me to have that outlet. Then there's also writing articles for Arif Hassan's Substack, which is why I left. I've written here and there kind of over the years. I wrote at Zone Coverage for a while. I actually got my start writing for a blog called Purple PTSD, which is still out there doing its thing. That was a small site started 7 or 8 years ago by a guy named Joe Johnson, who's since passed away, and it's still kicking. So I'm really proud of those guys over there doing that. And then a couple of other like editing projects that have nothing to do with football that I won't get into.
Okay. So that's kind of your outlet, and the rest of it's kind of your job for day to day. So I get that. Now, another thing I was wondering, I haven't experienced this yet. Have you had anybody that's ever been negative towards you? And then from that, how do you respond to that as a person? I mean, obviously you don't want to lash out at someone publicly, most likely. How do you take criticisms or negatives?
Boy, that's a good question. That is, I think, okay, so I'll tell you a story. My first job out of college was for a YouTube channel called SourceFed. You might even be able to go find old SourceFed videos and find my name in the description as like a credit. And that was a subsidiary of Phil DeFranco. If you ever watched YouTube in the 2000s, you remember him, or the 2010s. He's still doing his thing too. He's a blockbuster, right? And when I got there, they had this show. It was like a sort of a news current events show. It had three hosts and they were all white. And they did another expansion round of casting where they brought in three more hosts. And one of those extra three, so they would have six now, one of those guys was black. So it was the first time a black person would have ever been on this show. And one of my jobs at the time was to moderate the YouTube comment section during this time where they introduced the first black guy. Let me tell you, I saw some things. Oh my goodness, that was like a wake-up call for me. Wow, anyone will say anything behind the veil of anonymity, right? Sure. And that's something that is probably like, for most people, is like, well, yeah, duh. Like if you're online at all, you see all kinds of vitriol, you see all kinds of horrible things. Keyboard warriors behind anonymity will, you know, mask fully off, right? Yep. But that for me at 20, 21 years old, I was like, whoa, like that's crazy. And that experience, moderating that, seeing what everybody else had to say about somebody else and knowing that, like, I was kind of like, it was never about me, right? It was always about them. And it kind of prepared me for when now I have a platform and I have a fairly public face. Okay, people are going to say this kind of stuff to me. You know, they're going to make fun of every single thing that they can find about you, every little thing that you are self-conscious about. So like what, like my, like I look young, I look skinny, I look nerdy, I don't look like a football guy, right? People say that to me all the time. But I think because of that experience, I was like, you know what? This gets worse. This could be so much worse. And we would laugh at SourceFed at some of these because we would see these people being like so mean. And you click through to their YouTube channel and it's a 12-year-old kid. And it's like, you know what? I don't need to care about what you think. And I, over time, it kind of metastasized into this principle that I have. That is, I don't like with me, you get what you give. If you are going to give me disrespect, I'm going to give you disrespect back. And sometimes that's a little bit of fun to go in and spar a little bit. Like it's a guilty pleasure. It's probably shit, probably not good for me, but it's a little fun sometimes. But if people are respectful, especially if you disagree with me, but if you do so respectfully, I've actually had some really satisfying and fleshed out back and forth with people that vehemently disagree with me, but they've been respectful and we've had these big long conversations that I've enjoyed quite a bit, and I hope that they did too. And you know, I am so happy to give my time to that, especially if that means I'm not giving my time to the person that's like, who is this 12-year-old? Like, that person doesn't need my time. And at this point, once you get to a certain number, those people just get blocked. Those people just get hidden from the YouTube channel. Like those, I just don't need to hear from you ever again. And being like I used to be very like, well, I should hear everybody's voice. I should hear everybody's thing. And then you get to a point where that's just not feasible anymore. And where there's just certain people that's like, I don't need to hear your voice anymore. You're just right. A dick. Like all you are trying to do is like spit poison at me. How about I just never hear from you again? And then I forget about you and I don't think about you ever again. That seems good to me.
Well, you know, and I kind of experienced that because every Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, somewhere in there, I'll make a TikTok of the highlights of the episode that just came out. And I had one just about a month ago and the guy got, there was about, I don't know, 30 some odd comments kind of bashing on my guest a little bit. So I get what you're saying. Like I responded to a couple of them, but I didn't really give time and effort to some because I'm like, I don't even know who these people are. And they have their own opinion. That's fine. And like you said, it could be a 12-year-old back there talking to.
Like every time, every time it was either like a 12-year-old or it was somebody that like clearly wasn't like, well, like these are not people that they're either kids and it's like, oh, well, they just haven't grown up and they just don't really know not to say that. Or it's just somebody who doesn't need your time, somebody who doesn't need your energy, you know?
Yeah, they suck your energy out and just try to bring you in. I always tell people, I'm like, you know what? As my dad always says, a pig loves the mud fight. Don't get in a mud fight with a pig. So yeah, if that
you both get muddy and the pig likes it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So I was like, I tell people that all the time. I'm like, you know what? Their day's already bad. Why ruin your day too if they're upset? And it, you know, everyone can have their opinions. Opinions are just like, you know what? Everyone's got one. Fill in the blank. So, yeah. And so now going off of some of those, is there one that ever stands out that you remember that's, you know, one of them was just like, gosh, hate what he just said or she just
said. Gosh, you know, if sometimes they're really funny, especially if they come from like a very hateful place, they just come off as really funny. And like there are a lot of people that I interact with all the time, like Arif Hassan, who I write for, he makes fun of me all the time, but he's just razzing me. Like it's fun, right? And he does it, and it comes from a well-intentioned place to just have a little bit of fun back and forth. I don't know if I can remember them specifically, but I do know, like, I bet if I asked my wife, she would be like, remember that person that said this, because she's a better memory for these kind of things than I do. Sure. Because I'll always tell, I'll like be like, look what this guy said about me.
Okay, so I want to go to the opposite end of that then. I want to know, have you ever had someone give you a really amazing compliment that just stood out and you're like, man, that was awesome to hear that. It just made my day.
I will say, I try to respond to all of them, but if anybody has said something like this to me, I haven't responded. No, I've read it. I will occasionally get one that, you know, get a DM or something. It's like a big heartfelt thing. That's like, hey, you know, it's been really great. I've learned so much from your thing. And now here I am. And I'm like really interested in this and, you know, hey, what books should I get or something? And then like the curiosity is sparked. And I really try to approach football. I always have from a place of curiosity of not like, I don't have it all figured out. Nobody has it all figured. You'd ask Bill Belichick, you'd be like, I don't know anything. Everybody who is anybody in football has had that humility drilled into them by the sport. Football has a way of humbling you. The second you feel like you have it figured out, it will punch you right in the mouth and say, absolutely not, you don't know anything. And I love that about it. And so I've tried really hard to come at it with like curiosity. And if somebody has ever sent me a DM or a big long thing about that, that has said, you know, wow, you sparked my curiosity. God, that is just fills my heart.
That's awesome. Yeah. And it's awesome to hear those really good things. And then obviously the negatives, they kind of stink. Which ways do you stay in touch with your audience then? Is there one that works better keeping in touch with them?
Sure. I mean, on Twitter, or Blue Sky, I guess, which is starting to grow, like people can reach out to me whenever they want. You can DM me as long as you're nice, right? As long as you're a reasonably polite person, people will ask me questions all the time. I have my Twitter Tuesdays. My Tuesday episode on Locked On Vikings for 4 or 5 years has been a mailbag. Ask me whatever you want. No stupid questions. And I'm like very clear. No stupid questions. Somebody can ask me, hey, what are you supposed to do on third downs? Like, okay, yeah, let's talk about it. Because if that's where you're at, I want to come to meet you where you're at and see if we can spark more curiosity together. So that's great. People can send me an email, lockedonvikingspodcast@gmail.com. Shoot me an email whenever you want, about whatever you want. People have sent me, there's a book actually that someone sent me. This person just wrote a book that is about ancient Minnesota football. I mean, we're talking 1870s. And the start of Minnesota football, but you know, and like, oh, and then this year the Gophers decided to have a team. Okay, yeah, they decided to have end zones in 1904, like that old of football. And this person saw a lot of the like online databases, like the Pro Football References and stuff, get really unreliable around that time. And so they wrote an entire book that's just a log of like, this is how everybody did. And like the stories of all of these old players. It's the coolest thing ever. It's called Mill City Scrum. Absolutely go buy it. I'm not sponsored by this. This is just a guy that listens to my show and was like, hey, I thought you'd find this interesting. This is one of the coolest things ever. And so I went out and bought it. It rocks.
Does it have a history of all the rules in it at all?
It's just like as it comes up in the story of sure. Minnesota football, it's like, yeah, so they added end zones in this year and that changed things, which is really great for blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Well, my wife, every time we watch football, she has a question here and there. Like you said, you know, no, sure. No question's a dumb one, but it's hard to elaborate. And she goes, her direct quote was, yeah, men must have made this game, huh? Because it makes no sense.
I mean, look, like, it's called jumbo personnel when you have the big guys out there, okay? Like, it's not rocket science. It's made to be understandable.
And she goes, well, why is this one worth three, that worth seven, the PAT's worth one? I'm like, I don't know. It's just yeah. The way the rules are. I mean, but then again, you think about football, and it's almost like you're playing checkers or chess with the other team because mm-hmm. – you get to that fourth quarter and all of a sudden you're like, okay, I'm trying to run the clock up and I'm still trying to get a first down. But if we score, that'd be fantastic. If they get the ball back, they might. I mean, it's a big chess game. It's hard to tell her. So I was like, maybe that's got the history of the rules in it that could show.
I mean,
her.
It is. The answer to that question is, I have no idea. This decision was made 100 years ago that touchdowns would be worth six and, you know, field goals weren't even a thing. To start with, by the way, because it was basically rugby. You had to get into the end zone. And then they thought of it, well, what if you get close and you could kick? And that happened, you know, back in the Victorian era. And, you know, some guy was about to get yellow fever and die was figuring that one out. Like,
that's great. So with the podcast that you're on, which one's more of the favorite that you like to do? Do you get more into the Vikings one or do you like the broad general NFL?
Mm. Yeah, I'm only on Locked On NFL once a week. So Locked On NFL, there are two hosts that do a show a day. So there's two shows a day. One is the kind of morning kick in the teeth, Tyler Rowland. He's the madman, your kind of morning radio deal. And then the night show is the barbershop, a little bit more chill with Tony Wiggins. I'm on Wednesdays on the morning show. So that's just a half hour every week. We pop on, we talk about whatever's going on that day. Locked On Vikings is truly the labor of love. That's the one that is kind of my identity now, which is crazy because I didn't start Locked On Vikings. It was part of this Locked On network. Sam Ekstrom, who I now do a show with twice a week called the Minnesota Football Party, he was the first host of Locked On Vikings, and he did it for a couple of years, and then it kind of went dormant for a while. It had a brief stint with a guy named Jordan Reed, who's on ESPN now, but that only lasted for like a week. That wasn't a fit for him, so... He ended up getting a TV job, so he was clearly on to bigger and brighter things. And then in 2018, they called me, which it was crazy that they found me because I was on a stupid little blog and I just had my dumb little Twitter account. And they must have had some talent scout going, hey, maybe this is the guy. He's pretty passionate about the Vikings. Do you want to do it? And the rest is history. So that one has been like the one. And then Locked On NFL was actually... A fairly new, when I joined it, it was hosted by two guys named Brian Peacock and Matt Williamson. And now they have a show that's just the Peacock and Williamson show on the Locked On Network. And Locked On NFL is this like ensemble thing. That's kind of the backstory there. But yeah, I like having a reason to like pay attention nationally and go, oh, cool. I'm like glad I saw Justin Herbert play. I'm glad I saw a Joe Burrow game and I can kind of see that stuff. But it's always going to be the Vikings for me. They're the one that's near and dear to my heart. They're the one my soul is made of.
So what's life like in LA for a Vikings fan? Is it pretty easy? I mean, I can't imagine it's like being in Philadelphia doing this.
Yeah, LA... sports-wise is a Dodgers town and a Lakers town. You know, the Rams and Chargers are here, and I see a Rams hat every once in a while. But right now, Dodgers just won the World Series, so everybody's Dodgered out. It's not really as much of a football city, so it's... And the thing about LA, too, is nobody's from here.
Sure.
Everybody's a transplant. Everybody came from somewhere. When you ask, oh, cool, like, where'd you grow up? You... have just as good of a chance of hearing, you know, Spokane, Washington or Tallahassee as you do. Oh, I grew up, you know, in San Bernardino just down the road. So sure. Like, yeah, it's nobody's from here. And that means everybody's got a different affiliation. So yeah, the Vikings are just one of them. Even if you were, you know, a Seahawks fan or a Chiefs fan or something like that, like, whatever. It's what it is. It's not like being a Cowboys fan in Philly or anything like that.
Yeah, you said that you've been to the SoFi Stadium. Is that correct?
Yeah.
What's it like in there? I mean, I've been to US Bank, really cool, really crazy, but it looks like SoFi just looks out of this world. It looks like something from another dimension when you look at it from the outside. Yeah. What's it like inside?
So it was designed by the same guy as the guy that designed US Bank Stadium and Mercedes-Benz Stadium. So very similar vibe. It's super similar to US Bank. All the way up to the fact that it's like shaped like something, you know, it's a long ship for US Bank Stadium. It's a wave for SoFi. But, you know, it's very corporate. It doesn't quite have the character that you would get somewhere like Lambeau or Soldier, which are two of the more character-y ones that I've been to. That, you know, have their kind of, you can feel the history. You can see that every little scuff and ding has a story behind it. Not so much at these like cushy ones, but they're cushy. They're nice. You know, the food's good. Yeah. The seats are comfortable. They're not just like these plastic foldouts. So it's very nice. And unlike Dodger Stadium, it isn't a nightmare to get out of there afterwards.
Sure. Well, now, so that sparks another question for me. Have you been to the new LA Clippers stadium yet?
I have not.
That looks just nuts. I saw some TikToks on it. It just looks crazy. And so when you said you've been to Lambeau, what's that like then? Because that's got to be one of the oldest stadiums out there.
That was a great time. So that's got a whole story too. So my uncle has, or it's like my uncle by marriage's cousin. So it's this guy that like I'm technically related to by marriage, but I've never met before. Has one of those houses that's right across from Lambeau Field, like right in that neighborhood. Really? And it's been in the family forever and ever. And now they use it as like a tailgate place, which a lot of those places are like tailgate houses now, where you can, if you pitch or, you know, you invite friends and family and stuff over, and they have this ridiculous spread of meat, like unbelievable food. So my dad and I got in touch with them because we wanted to go to Lambeau. And so we said, hey, you know, can we stay with you guys? Yeah, of course. And you know, my uncle and my cousin were with us as well. So we all went to the game together, but that was crazy. And it's like all decked out. There's like fat heads of Brett Favre, all these big giant, like prints of, you know, this really cool, like Aaron Rodgers thing, like all this cool Packers stuff. It's like I'm a Vikings fan. Of course I hate the Packers. But they had like a Packers theme. Like it was one of the coolest places I've seen in terms of just like the power of this man cave was so, it was a whole house of just like man cave. It felt like I was in a museum. It was super, super sick. So we spent the night there, woke up, essentially had our like pregame tailgate, and those guys don't even go to the game. They like watch it in there. That was the garage I watched the last part of the game in. But then you go to Lambeau and yeah, it's an old stadium. You know, the concourses are cramped and it's kind of crappy and it smells weird. And it's like getting in was a nightmare. It's not meant for the traffic that, you know, NFL games get now today. So it has all these logistical issues. It's dingy and it's bad, right? But like, you kind of just don't mind because you're like, I'm walking through the halls of where something cool happened in the 70s, where there's nowhere else in the league that still had, you can't walk into, you know, the Met Field. Like you can go onto the spot at the Mall of America where the home plate used to be, but you can't walk through that and be like, I feel like I'm like standing on the shoulders of legends. So I think it's really cool. I know Vikings fans really are going to hate that I say that, but I think Lambeau is really fun. And I just had a fun time. Like the rivalry is fun. Okay. You go up, we're wearing our Viking stuff. You're surrounded by Packers fans. People are like chirping at me about Kyle Rudolph and I'm chirping back. And like, it was fun. Right. And I've seen scenarios. Like I've been to a couple of like Rams playoff games that I had no stake in. I went to a Rams Falcons playoff game and Rams and Falcons fans chirping at each other. And it wasn't fun. Like they were mad. Like they were both a little bit drunk and they were like, it was like going to be a fight. Right. When I was in Lambeau, it was like, but you know, and like pats on the shoulder, you know, like the Vikings would throw an interception or something. Everybody would be like, the good stuff. And then they'd get a touchdown and I'd be like, got you back. Like it was fun. It was lighthearted and it was very Midwestern in a way that like, you know, very famously, you wouldn't find it like Lincoln Financial Field, right? That's different.
Sure.
So the vibe was very jovial and fun. And it's, I think that's a great thing about the Vikings Packers rivalry is that it is a little bit brother on brother. And it's not, you know, you look at the Patriots and the Dolphins. No, they just like hate each other. It's not fun because you don't live next door to each other. You don't have You drive along neighborhoods along the St. Croix River, and you'll find a million split households, Vikings fans that married Packers fans, or, you know, kids that, you know, the son decided to be rebellious and root for the other team. You'll see those flags that say, like, house divided. Like, you'll see that. Yeah. I think that's a cool thing about the rivalry, that it is, at the end of the day, it's brothers kind of giving each other, you know, putting each other in headlocks. And that was what I felt at Lambeau. I felt like it was everybody was there to have a good time and have fun and chirp at each other. And, you know, it was like a hot day, so it was an outdoor thing. And so we were all kind of sweating and getting sunburned and watching what turned out to be an absolutely weird and wild game. But it was a very cool experience.
Well, you brought me to my next question. And my thoughts in my head always is Vikings Packers is the biggest rivalry in all of NFL. Now, we might be a little biased saying that, yes, it sure might be, but do you think there's another one that is just as big in our mind to everyone else? Or is it just we think Packers and Vikings is the biggest one because where we're from? Or is there another one that's bigger, do you think?
So I think of the AFC North a lot. Because the Browns, I mean, the Bengals were the Browns and the Ravens were the Browns. Like, that happened to both of those. And this is the third iteration of the Browns that now have to play those two twice a year. Not to mention Steelers-Browns blood feud, Steelers-Ravens blood feud, Steelers-Bengals blood feud, right? Like, those divisions all hate each other. But I honestly probably have to say Falcons-Saints. I don't know if you've seen John Boyce's Falcons documentary.
I have not.
Over at Secret Base. Can't recommend it enough, and his Mariners one, and he's actually done a Vikings one. But in the Falcons one, he goes over the kind of history of the Falcons-Saints rivalry, and it's very persuasive for this. In the entire South, until the Falcons and Saints joined, there was no team in the South, no NFL team in the South, because nobody wanted to compete with college football because of how big it is in the South, right? And these college football, the South has bred people with college football rivalries with, you know, Alabama, Auburn, with, you know, Georgia and Tennessee. And they freaking hate each other. It's familial and it's ancient. They hate each other with the all of the ire of the Capulets and the Montagues, right? Like, it is on-site hatred. And you bring that attitude to the NFL when the Falcons and Saints join in the, whenever it was, the like late 60s or whatever. And those are the only two teams in the South for so long until eventually you get the Tennessee Titans and like there's Florida, but Florida barely counts. Like it's kind of a different thing than like the South as you think of it in Arkansas and Alabama and Mississippi and those states. And so it's different. And there is this just like white hot hatred that's completely self-contained because both of those teams were bad for a long time. So it wasn't like, you know, when you had the Bears and Packers going at it against each other or the Vikings and Packers going at each other in the 70s where they were good teams, you know, the 60s and 70s. There was always somebody there that was the dominant force and there were stakes to it. But the Falcons and Saints, this was two and 10 teams going at it just for bragging rights and pride. And then you apply that like college football hatred to it. And you get something that is truly there just for the sake of hate. It's hate just for the sake of hate. I think that's awesome. I think the Vikings-Packers rivalry is one of the biggest ones in the league, and it's one of the consistently best ones because both teams are pretty consistently good. You don't get stuff like the Patriots beating up on the Bills for 20 years, right? That's not going to happen in this rivalry. You're not going to get, for example, the Packers-Bears 11 in a row. That'll never happen in this rivalry. Not the way these two teams are managed, not until ownership of one of these teams changes. It's never going to be like that.
Sure.
But that Falcons-Saints one is interesting.
I never would have thought that when you said that. I was thinking you were going to say like Cowboys Eagles or maybe Patriots Dolphins, but I did not think Falcons and Saints was going to be one you'd say.
I think about, the Eagles, like the NFC East ones, they all kind of beat up on each other, but the AFC North I think of as like true hate and then like the South.
Okay. Now I want to go over a little bit of Vikings history because I think
Patreon.com/LukeRunNFL. I have a 7-part documentary.
What was that again? Say
documentary series, 7-part documentary series on the entire history of the Minnesota Vikings up to 2021, which is when I released it, was my kind of passion project a couple years ago at patreon.com. It's what I started the Patreon page with. You can still go watch it all for free. 7 hours worth of Minnesota Vikings history content. And it's not like there are like these DVDs and it's like this kind of NFL filmsy way that's like, and then they beat this team and then they scored a touchdown. And it's not that. It's human. Okay. It's the stories. It's the vibe. It's how they grew with the growth of Minneapolis and the growth of Minnesota as a state.
Sure.
All kinds of little anecdotes you probably haven't heard of.
So in my mind, there's three really awesome years for the Vikings. I know there's more. It's what I can remember from when I was younger. I want to get your thoughts on the 98 Vikings when they drafted Moss, because in my mind, I remember watching the draft. I was in about fifth grade, and I said to my dad, myself, I said, if we get this guy, we're going to go to the Super Bowl. I just saw highlights of Randy Moss, and I was just like, man, if we get that guy, we got something. And we almost did. I mean, what, were we like a field goal away from going?
Yeah, right.
What are your thoughts on that team? Was that a big one in your mind?
I mean, yeah, 98 was formative. I was 6 years old. So that was big. And I was pretty young. So memory's a little hazy of that time. But I do remember, I mean, you know, when you're that age, what your dad says is what you say. And what my dad said was, you know, he didn't want a knucklehead, and Randy Moss was no knucklehead, right? He didn't want a knucklehead, and until you beat up the Packers, and then everybody is like, this is the greatest dude in the world. But that team was, the phrase I used in the documentary was all men of second chances. Chris Carter was on his second chance, right? Randy Moss had been in trouble. This was his second chance. And this is the thing about Denny Green, that he kind of built this team off of, you know, you've had all these problems and nobody believes in you, but I believe in you. And he found people worth it. Randall Cunningham was selling granite before he went in. Like, he was completely out of the league before that season. Guys like John Randall, too small, but Denny Green believed in him. All over that defense too, guys that, you know, he believed in. And it was this perfect team for, like, it was such a good story that they didn't win, but they made a whole new version of the America's Game series on NFL Network just so they could do one on those guys, because it was such a good story with so many compelling people on it. It so deserved to be the thing. But isn't that what football is? Football doesn't care about all that context, because football isn't a movie. It's real life, and sometimes real life punches you in the gut when you don't deserve to be punched in the gut. And that's what happened to Vikings fans. They didn't deserve to be punched in the gut, but they were, because the perfect kicker missed, and you know the game went the way it was supposed to go. And ultimately, they never really got back to that level of domination. But they still hold a place in NFL history that is undeniable. And that's something that we can all hang our hats on.
Well, I'm going to go off another gut punch then. The 2009 Vikings. Uh-huh. Yeah. You know where I was going with this, man.
Of course.
I mean, I was so excited. I mean, obviously Brett Favre was a Packer. Mm-hmm. He'll probably always be known as a Packer, but when we got him, I was so excited. I'm like, yeah, we got a chance. Like, we got the guy. I mean, he's on his way out the door, but he's still got a little bit of life left in him. What are your thoughts on the 09 season, and specifically that Saints game, that damn Saints game?
Yeah. Well, that one's more angering, right?
No kidding.
The metaphor I used on the history documentary was like wine, right? If you want like a full body, you know, like a very normal heartbreak that's classy and dignified, you reach for the 98 game. It was a normal game, right? It was, I mean, they failed, they messed up, but nobody blinked. Nobody was like, I hate the Falcons now, right? Falcons won that game fair and square. Tip your hat. Good luck in the Super Bowl. With the Saints, it's tart. It's angry. It's a little bit more sour. But that team was, I mean, they had built a super team over a decade, right? You had guys from 02, 03, you had, you know, your Kevin Williamses up to your Jared Allens that had joined the year before, and Percy Harvin who joined that year, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it was, you know, stacked top to bottom. The Brett Favre phenomenon, the whole thing was a little surreal. That's when I think about the 2009 year, it's like still weird. I don't even know if it happened. Because Brett Favre was like, it felt like a fever dream. And seeing him, you know, throw to Bernard Berrien, who, by the way, beat the Vikings up for like 4 years as a Bear before he became it, you know, it's weird. It would be like seeing, you know, Aaron Rodgers come back, but also he's throwing to like Amon-Ra St. Brown. And it's like that guy too. Like, well, this is bizarre. And the Brad Childress thing, and you know, the like pants on the ground. That was my senior year of high school, and there were all these weird little cultural moments that just freeze it in time because they all aged really cringy. Like the pants on the ground thing, and the way that Brett Favre had his hat sometimes. Like, it was, it's just so 2000, late 2000s. But the, you know, then the Bountygate thing happens, and it was this horrible ref thing, of course, that you get super, super mad about. And ultimately, I'm sure every Vikings fan has their own opinion on this. For me, I think the Saints paid their price. They lost a Super Bowl window, like a truly lost a Super Bowl window by losing Drew Brees and Sean Payton for one, or losing Sean Payton and Greg Williams for 1 year of Drew Brees' prime, threw the whole thing into total disarray. That was the last year that their defense was anything worth a damn. Their defense falls apart. The rest of Drew Brees' prime was basically wasted on not having a defense. By the time they did, Brees was old. They couldn't get it done in the playoffs. So they lost a decade-long Super Bowl window to that scandal. I think that's punishment enough. That's plenty. That's a lot. Like, I think that's fair. But I think to Saints fans who think it's a smear job, you can't argue that it wasn't a bunch of cheap shots. And so whether or not they were paid, which I actually think the evidence that paying for injuries was maybe a trumped up thing, I think that evidence is shaky at best, but it doesn't matter because it isn't about how money changed hands. It's about how the Saints played cheap shots. They hit the quarterback well after. They went for the knees. They played dirty football, bar none, period. And I don't think there should be a place for that. And I don't think Greg Williams should have been in the league for as long as he was.
Sure. Well, then we got our revenge on the Saints, and we had the Minneapolis Miracle.
I was at that one.
You were at the game.
I was at the Miracle. Yes. Oh my goodness.
This is even better that you were at the game, because I didn't know if you had been. Well, okay. What is going on during that whole scenario? Walk us through your vantage.
Yeah. So I was only in for the weekend. And I was working a job. I couldn't really afford to miss a lot of time on it and where I was in my life at the time. That game was Sunday at 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock. And I basically had to pop out of that game, rush to the airport and get a flight. So we were kind of talking as the game went on, because that game started so well that it was 21-3 or something at the beginning, 17-3 at the beginning. And we were killing them. And we were like, okay, if this is like a blowout, we're not going to stay. You know, it's going to be like tight with the flight. I'll leave kind of halfway through the fourth quarter if the game is really over, so I can make my flight. So we kind of started talking about that. And then the Saints started coming back, and it was very clear that it wasn't going to be like this. So we didn't do it. But that is genuinely, I think, maybe my favorite memory ever with my dad. I was there with him and my stepmom and his coworker, Steve. And Steve had his phone out basically the whole time, taking videos and pictures. And he was like documenting the whole thing. He's this total, bleeds purple super fan. And he was trying to get, the best video ever. So when the miracle happened, he flipped over and he just took a picture of me and my dad that is now framed. It is my Twitter banner. It's my Patreon banner. It is the greatest picture ever taken of the two of us, of our reaction. Not to the play, but when it was confirmed that he didn't step out of bounds and that it counted. And we went totally crazy. And it's, in hindsight, it's wild to think that I ever even for a minute thought that I would cut short my time at a playoff game with my dad. That kind of special memory that is so important to all of us in our experience of football, that I would ever cut that short because I was a little bit worried about making a flight, which, by the way, I made comfortably. Even after the miracle and all that stuff. But yeah, we were walking out like this never happens to us. Like, we didn't know how to feel or what to do with our hands. Right. But that moment, I mean, everybody has that moment and who they were with and what they were doing. But there's something so beautiful that happens at every Vikings game I've ever been to, whether it's road or not, that if you're, because a lot of the games I've been to, I've been surrounded by other Vikings fans. Vikings fans travel so well. You are immediately friends. And you're hugging strangers after this. Yeah. Like, you have no idea who this person is, and you're hugging them like they are your, they're your father. Like, you're just immediately all together And it's something about how we are, as people, we want to be in groups and we want to be included in each other's stories, that football brings everybody together so much. And it is just no cleaner example of that than after the miracle, when we were all down and then suddenly we were all so back up, that kind of makes you realize how important football is, even in a game that's not even the Super Bowl. It's not even the game to get to the Super Bowl. It's the game to get to the game to get to the Super Bowl. And then they get blown out the next week. And you know what? I don't care, because I had the greatest experience ever with my dad. You will never take that away from me. You'll never take that joy away from me. They could have been beaten 58-7, and it wouldn't have changed a damn thing. And that's what's beautiful about sports. And what I wish more people understood, that when you're with your people and you're watching the Vikings, you're doing something that's special and important to your relationship with each other, and that it doesn't matter if they lose 38-7. And it never has.
I remember I was standing up around me, just kind of, we had people over, and I was like, oh, the game's probably over. Let me just watch his last play. And all of a sudden I'm like, same thing as you. I'm like, did he step out of bounds? He probably did. Who knows? And then nothing. And the call was confirmed. And I just couldn't believe it. And then the disappointment the next week happened, but you're right. Nothing will ever take that away. And now you have a memory with your dad, which is actually awesome as well, because
you don't ask me about 38-7. You ask me about the miracle. Everybody does. Yeah. Because that's the thing that matters.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, as we're starting to wind down here, I want to go on to my very last question I have for you, because I have a feeling it's going to take a few minutes to get through this. Who's your favorite Vikings player of all time? And if you don't have, if you can mention that right away, Chris Carter. Perfect.
Always has been. That was my posters growing up. He's my jersey. He was my jersey as a kid. He was a role model, right? By the time I was old enough to understand, he was like the most upstanding citizen in the world, right? He wasn't like the kind of addict that he was in Philly, but he was a guy. I mean, he was a redemption story, right? He was a guy that showed that you could, it's never too late to pull it together and become something greater than yourself. But he was also, I don't know, the dude that scored a whole bunch of touchdowns. He was my favorite ever.
Yeah. He had some of the greatest catches on the sideline. I just remember that. Oh, yeah. He had some of the best ones. And my favorite player, he was my first love. And then my second love is Moss. Mm-hmm. He was my second love. And he's my favorite player of all time. Yeah. I think it's just because of a little bit of the flashiness. The cool catches was what really got me. Some of those really unbelievable catches that you would never think of. One of my favorite ones is when he caught it and then he hook and laddered it behind him for the touchdown.
Mo Williams, yes.
Williams, there you go. I was gonna say Robert Smith, but
like the Academy Award.
Cool. And then some of those, you know, even he was still my favorite player even when he was not with the Vikings. I remember him making that really one-handed catch from Tom Brady, and I thought it was just the absolute coolest thing. The one-handed catches, the going up and just mossing someone as it wasn't called back then. Those are just some of the things. And then,
you know, kids still say
shot
it.
The moon to the crowd. Oh yes,
if you walk up to any like 13-year-old and you're like, what does it mean to get mossed? Like, they'll know. Like, that's a legacy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. So as we're winding down, like I said here, what is some of your favorite things about the Vikings? Do you have one favorite? Is it the miracle, or is there one other favorite memory of the Vikings that you have?
Oh, it's got to be the miracle. I'm sure everybody will have the exact same answer to this, which is part of what makes that moment so special. We all remember where we were, and we all remember the joy we felt and who we felt it with. But it has to be the miracle. There was another one I was at, if you want a spicier answer. I was at the game before the Bounty Gate game, the 34-3, I think it was, absolute dismantling of the Dallas Cowboys. That was a very fun one to be at, especially as they started running it up and it started to get a little disrespectful, which I've always enjoyed. I think if you're in a professional sport, you don't get to worry about like decorum. If you want to stop them, there's only one way to do it, and that's to be good. And if you can't, you can't. By the way, on the touchdown that Wade Phillips was really mad about, he blitzed. So you can suck it.
And lastly, I want to ask you, what do you think about this team this year? Where are we going? We're 8-2 as of this podcast. When this podcast comes out next Monday, we'll have already played the Bears, I believe.
Right.
Where are we going this year? I want your insight, man.
Yeah, you got to take them seriously. That's the way it is. I went into this season. You can go listen to my August Locked On Vikings. I was down on it. And I think we all were, right? They were supposed to kind of be one of the worst teams in the league. This is going to be a Sam Darnold year. Now JJ McCarthy is hurt. We're just kind of, we were just sort of killing time until really the next chapter can start, which is the JJ McCarthy chapter.
Yep.
And I think there is an act of defiance going on right now from these Vikings and from Darnold specifically going, no, no, no. I am not a waste of time. We are going to go into every game we're into, and we're going to at least be in it to the end. If not, you know, win all of them, but they were into the last two to the last moment. You know, sure. The Lions had a game-winning field goal. That's it. Yeah. And the Rams was down to that one last drive and the face mask and all that stuff. And they've beaten every other team. They've dismantled teams, good teams, 49ers, Texans, and then they've beaten the absolute piss out of bad teams too. Sure. They have forced you to respect them in a world where everybody was okay with not respecting them. There is
even
a
our fans, even us as fans, I think.
Me. Too. I mean, yeah, I went in going, look, if they can go in a week two and, you know, convincingly beat the 49ers, then I'll respect them. But that ain't going to happen. And then it happened. So money where my mouth is, right? Like, I will respect them. And I think they demand that you take them seriously in an undeniable way. They are now, I mean, you win two more games from here on out. Two. Sweep the Bears, lose everything else. And you sure. are in the playoffs, right? Or I guess who knows what happened against the Bears, but we certainly don't yet. But two more games, you're in the playoffs. Two more wins. All the way, right. Like for the rest of the year. That's all you need now. And so they'll be playing in the playoffs more than likely. So whatever happens in January will be how this season is remembered, right? 2022 is remembered as the year that Kirk Cousins threw it short on 4th-and-8, not the year that they went 13-3, right? Like that's right. How these things go down, and that's the nature of it, and it's maybe not necessarily fair. But I think defiant is the word that I'm using. It's no, screw you. We still can win.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, Luke, I want to thank you for coming on and joining me for the time that you had. I want you to plug the places that people can find you.
Sure. Search out Locked On Vikings anywhere you listen to shows, including YouTube, but also Spotify, Apple Podcasts, like anywhere you listen to podcasts. It'll be on all of that. You can also find patreon.com/LukeBraunNFL, where you can find the history doc. Please go watch that. It's free to watch. I don't make any money from it. I just want people to see it, because I worked very hard on it, and it was very much like a labor of love, a passion project that I poured a lot of my own personal stories into. So please go look at that. I would love it if you watched that down. And then if you want, you can give me less than $4 a month. You can see everything I do.
Perfect. Thank you again, Luke, for coming on. And for those who are listening to the Brews and Cruise podcast, again, you can find me on any streaming platform, or you can watch us on YouTube and check us out, see our beautiful faces. But again, this has been another episode of Brews and Cruise. Again, thank you, Luke, for coming all the way in from LA and joining us for today. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks, Luke. Appreciate it very much, man.
Yeah, that was good. That was fun. That is, it's not.